Mr. Weinstein.
Thank you, Your Honor. In my view, this case presents a question of what the role of the district court is in reviewing a state case in habeas corpus when the challenge is that the state court decision is an unreasonable application of clearly established federal laws determined by the United States Supreme Court. The decision in this case, the district court conducted an extensive de novo review of whether or not Mr. Jackson's waiver of Miranda and his right to counsel was voluntary, and then almost as an afterthought applied the statutory criteria for the issuance of the writ, whether or not the decision that the Wisconsin Court of Appeals reached was an unreasonable application of United States Supreme Court precedent. It's also interesting that the district court's primary focus in this case dealt with Miranda itself and some language in Miranda, which, in my view, has not been clearly, especially by the United States Supreme Court, has not been clearly defined. When the Supreme Court precedent that the state court applied was Duckworth versus Egan, which is, of course, a progeny of Miranda, but did not involve any kind of waiver. It was a question of a different use of the language in the warning itself.
Oh, in Duckworth, the information given to the defendant as to the availability of an attorney was a correct statement of the law.
That's true.
And the defendant was repeatedly advised of the right to have an attorney present during questions, during the questioning. And in our case, the officer misinformed Mr. Jackson as to his ability to obtain counsel and left the impression that the defendant had to choose between speaking with the police or obtaining counsel. So surely you're not arguing that Jackson was adequately informed of his right to counsel during questioning?
If we were on direct appeal, yes, indeed, but that's not where we are. The question is whether or not the state court decision was a reasonable application of Duckworth. In other words, was it reasonable for the state court to decide that despite the difference in Duckworth in this case, that the information was accurate in Duckworth, was it reasonable to nonetheless find the waiver of counsel reasonable, of voluntary?
So you don't think that whether what he was advised was accurate or inaccurate shouldn't be a critical factor in our determination of reasonableness in terms of what the state court applied? It seems to me that's the critical factor.
Well, if you can find a Supreme Court case that says that that's a critical factor, then yes, I think it is a critical factor. But I don't find that case. The district court didn't cite such a case. And
maybe because it's so obvious.
Well, maybe,
maybe
because there's no law on it.
Case.
I mean, is misinformation alone sufficient?
Well, this was big misinformation to say that he wouldn't be entitled to counsel until he was charged, which was basically what he said. I mean, that's a big misinformation. That's not some small little minor point as to, maybe who he might get, which public defender. I mean, there are a lot of cases where, you look at Miranda and there are a lot of nuances and a lot of small facts that perhaps we wouldn't be so critical. But it seems to me this was a critical misstatement.
Maybe you might even say it was a lie.
Well, there's no evidence of that, and the state court found there's no evidence of that. So I don't really think that the district court or this court can reach that conclusion. The other thing is, if you look at Mr. Jackson's testimony at the suppression hearing, he said He understood his rights. He understood he had no obligation to talk to the police until he got an attorney, whenever that was, and he decided that he wanted to talk at this particular point in time. Now, it's true that I'm sure he factored whether how long this was going to take into his decision, but I don't know that that clearly means that his waiver was involuntary.
But don't we have to also put this in a factual context, the fact that he had been arrested and then sat in jail for 4.5 days with no appearance, no lawyer coming or anything?
Well, that was raised but not reached by the district court, if you're talking about a Riverside violation.
That would be a street violation. I know that this case doesn't turn on that, but
it certainly would be one of the facts surrounding
the context in which he was given this advice and the fact that he had been there 4.5 days.
Well, he had actually been in the hospital for part of that time, but the record doesn't indicate
how long.
But again, yes, at least on direct appeal, that would certainly be a factor to be considered.
By declaring that he could not obtain counsel for Jackson and that a public defender would be assigned when the charges were issued, didn't the officer essentially tell Mr. Jackson, look, if you want to avoid the filing of charges or influence the charges that are going to be filed, he would have to waive his right of counsel? I mean, isn't that a reasonable way to look at all of this?
I don't know that it is, and unfortunately, the record wasn't very well developed in the state court on this point. The cross-examiner did not ask the police officer what he meant when he said that. He did. There was evidence on direct that the officer believed that what Jackson wanted was a lawyer right at that moment, not 2 hours, 3 hours, a day later. It also may be, although we don't know, it's speculation, whether or not the statutory provisions in their practical application were, whether that's what the officer was talking about. We just don't have any facts on that sort of thing. And I think that would go to, for instance, whether or not, in fact, the statement that the officer made was intended to induce Jackson to waive his right to counsel. See that I want to reserve some for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Weinstein. We'll hear now from Ms. Schwartz.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, I'm Melinda Schwartz, and I represent Mr. Jackson in this case. In this case, the police detective made affirmative misstatements, not about the evidence against Mr. Jackson, but affirmative misstatements about Mr. Jackson's right to appointed counsel during custodial interrogation. The United States Supreme Court has never said that the police can make affirmative misstatements about the nature, dimensions, and applicability of constitutional rights in order to procure a valid waiver of those rights. In Miranda, the United States Supreme Court said that a suspect must be fully informed of their right to appointed counsel during custodial interrogation prior to waiving those rights. In Moran and Spring, which I've cited in my brief, the Supreme Court reaffirmed that the police cannot deprive a person who's in custody with the knowledge that is essential to understanding the nature of those constitutional rights in procuring a valid waiver of those rights. Now, inasmuch as the state has talked about the absences in the record with regard to the police intent or the evidence about the police intent, the state had the burden of proof of that at the hearing. But additionally, the police intent, whether it was intentional or reckless, is irrelevant to this consideration, because in this instance, because we're talking about a waiver of constitutional rights, the focus is on the person. What was it that Mr. Jackson understood? And looking at the facts of this case, it is clear that Mr. Jackson's waiver was unknowing and involuntary. He had been held, and from my calculation, I believe it's 3.5 days incommunicado. In one breath, he's now interrogated. In one breath, the officer gives him the right to appoint a counsel during interrogation. Mr. Jackson invokes that right, and in the next breath, the officer takes that right away from him. And I also believe that, as Judge Rovner pointed out, this is an unreasonable, not only is it incorrect, but it's also an unreasonable application of established Supreme Court precedent, because Duckworth is not an inaccurate information case. Duckworth is an accurate information case. In this case, the state court did not look at Miranda and its progeny. Miranda also, not only requiring that a suspect be fully informed of his rights, Miranda also requires, or states in it, that the person who has invoked those rights must be afforded the opportunity to exercise those rights. And in this case, our state, Wisconsin, has provided an opportunity for suspects who are in custody to exercise those rights, and those rights were not followed, and those opportunities were not followed in this case. Whether that was intentional or reckless, again, is irrelevant, because the officer, Wisconsin clearly requires that a person who's in custody must be afforded the opportunity to immediately contact the state public defender. And again, I also believe that there is Supreme Court precedent that supports the position. Miranda, and there's also cases that refer to the Miranda decision about whether trickery can also be part of whether the police are allowed to use trickery or not. And with regard to the state's argument as to whether the officer understood what was Mr. Jackson's request, I can tell the court that it's clear to me that the officer understood from the record, he understood that Mr. Jackson was trying to invoke his right to counsel. And unless the court has any questions, I'm just going to rely on the arguments in my brief.
Thank you, Ms. Schwartz. Mr. Weinstein, you have 2 minutes.
The standard for an unreasonable application is whether the decision of the state court is minimally consistent with the facts and circumstances of the case. I don't find this standard in the district court's opinion. And that's really what the district court should have been deciding, not whether or not, in the first instance, Mr. Jackson voluntarily waived his constitutional rights, a question which may well have been incorrectly decided on the at the state court level, but that's not the question that was before the district court, and it's not the question before this court. The question is whether or not the state court could take Duckworth and its teaching, which is the only thing Miranda requires is that when a defendant invokes his right, the police must cease questioning, and they did. And he is left with perhaps the difficult choice of deciding whether to talk now or wait for the lawyer, whenever that is. He understood that. He said he understood that. And that's the determination of whether or not a waiver is voluntary. But the real question here is whether or not, without any guidance from the Supreme, there's no decision on this. Counsel points out that the Supreme Court has never decided that one can acquire a waiver through misinformation. But the Supreme Court has never decided that misinformation alone invalidates a waiver. And that's the problem. It has to be clearly established federal law before the state court decision can be, before the writ can issue, not technically an overturn.
Clearly established Supreme Court precedent.
That's right. Clearly established Supreme Court precedent.
Thank you, Mr. Weinstein. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.